A lot of businesses are running their companies around profit. Well, you should be running it around free cash flow. You know, you go from profit to operating cash flow to free cash flow. Free cash flow is where it's at, because that's what you're trying to, that's the money you can take out of your businesses, and it doesn't impact in any way, shape, or form the incremental progress, the 10%, the 20%. My portfolio grows at about 30% per year and year over year. And that's really what people are trying to do. They're trying to build in a system that creates growth. And there's a lot of mistakes that are made because we don't understand the outcome. The proper outcome is, I'd like to own all of my time and have a residual stream of income that is just growing year after year after year.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an absolutely awesome week so far, and it's about to get better, because I'm really excited to have on the show as my guest today, Jason Cisneros. Jason is a public speaker, an entrepreneur, a philanthropist. His life has taken him around the world, speaking on over 3,000 stages, consulting with hundreds of business owners, and supporting charities all around the world. And most recently, Jason has taken on comedy. So Jason works with his team at Anton Jay, and they work with clients when the client's company has a lot of potential, but also a lot of questions about the direction they're headed. They help them deal with change and set direction that results in growth. His work with so many clients, and a lot of them Fortune 500 clients, has resulted in Jason earning the nickname The Architect. Jason is also the CEO of Feed a Billion, a nonprofit organization that works with local charities to provide healthy and nutritious meals to people in need all around the world. And he's also heavily involved in charities in the area of domestic violence and sex slavery. So an all-round good guy. I loved having him in the podcast. I think you're going to really enjoy today's interview. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Now, you can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. So that's innovabiz.co/VIP for a very important person. If you don't yet have an account, click the blue Take a Peek Inside button. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, and especially for you, my VIP podcast audience. In our discussion today, Jason talked to me about the importance of having a vision of where you want to be and what you want to be, then setting in place a stepwise plan to get there. We talked about how to ensure that everyone in your company or organization is working towards the same goals and with passion and conviction that has meaning for them. And we talked about making loving the outcomes of your customers the core of your company culture. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jason Cisneros. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Utah in the USA, where he is right at the moment, Jason Cisneros. Jason is a public speaker, he's an entrepreneur, and he's also a philanthropist. His life has taken him around the world, speaking on over 3,000 stages, I believe, consulting with hundreds of business owners and supporting charities across the globe. And most recently, and he was just telling me this in the get to know you little session we have before we do the interview, that most recently he's taken on comedy. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Jason. It's a real privilege to have you as a guest.
Well, it's my pleasure and privilege to be here. I'm excited to have our conversation.
Yeah. Now, Dave Blanchard, who was on episode 146 of the Innova Buzz podcast, suggested that we speak to Jason. So big hello to Dave.
Big hello to Dave. Yep, we love him. He's happens to be one of our clients and one of my dearest friends.
Yeah, great. And we had a lot of fun talking to him as well. Now, you and your team at Anton J, which is your company, work with clients when their company has a lot of potential, but also when they're kind of in question mode, if you like, about where the company's headed, and you help them deal with change and set direction and drive growth, really. So I'm really keen to explore that some more. You've earned the nickname the architect, if I got that correctly, with all the work that you've done. And you're also CEO of Feed a Billion, which is a not-for-profit organization that works with local charities to provide healthy and nutritious meals to people in need around the world. You're also involved in several other nonprofit organizations that are doing some wonderful work. So really keen to learn more about those as well. But before we start talking about all things entrepreneurship and philanthropy and consulting, I know you've had a really, what can be considered a unique background in the circles that you probably operate in now. And I don't want to go into that in a lot of detail because we'll send links to people if they want to read some more. But just in a little snapshot, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you were today or where you are today? And what were some of the pivotal moments in your journey?
It's a great question. I'm always interested at how I'm going to answer it too, because you never know how much is too much. I was adopted very young, and my adopted father, who married my mother, was sort of a bad guy, and you know, a lot of abuse and whatnot. And when I was a child, which led to a lot of the philanthropy I'm involved in now, but he eventually went to prison when I was 17 years old for attempted murder of myself and my mom. And I was, you know, sort of in the business, you know, dealing drugs and in the criminal lifestyle until I came across a few, you know, mentors and had a near-death experience, I guess you could call it, the same week that my son was born. And I decided, you know, that I didn't want him to live the same lifestyle. I didn't want to foist that on him, and decided that I would start to turn around my life. And I didn't know how, but it led to mentors. I mean, the exact show that you're putting on now is putting out information for people that otherwise wouldn't have access to the people that you interview. And you know, that's kind of how I grew: books and mentors and, you know, seminars and you know, later on in YouTube and different things of that nature. So it was an interesting upbringing, and that led me into, you know, a low-paying job, and then I worked my way up and eventually ended up buying my first company and did a lot of, I did really well with my first company. I just didn't understand all of the moving parts and pieces. And then, so I ended up crashing that one, and then I opened another one and crashed that one, and I went bankrupt three times, you know. Mm-hmm. So probably, I don't know if I'm your biggest failure that you've had on here, but probably close. I remember looking up one day and going, you know, most people think they're broke when they have zero money in the bank account. And I thought, man, that'll be a good day. You know, I'm $2.3 million away from that right now.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. Yeah.
Well, as our conversation progresses, obviously, you know, those are the things that people from Harvard and Yale and Wharton Business School and, you know, lots of other people, you know, pay me for really for those failures, not so much for the successes. They pay me more for to avoid the failure and then the systems and processes that have led to success.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that whilst you use the term failure, really it's just a series of lessons that you now are using to help your clients.
Oh, absolutely. I believe failure.
Didn't work, and you've probably figured out what does work.
Yeah. Failure, I think, too, success is as air is to breathing. I think it's so necessary. And, you know, your big topic of innovation, you know, is failing in a safe environment, small, so that you can succeed big. And it's just really failing in an educated way rather than an unconscious way is what I've discovered is really the success to life in general, not just business.
Mm. I'm curious because I obviously did a lot of research and heard your story in a lot more detail than what you've shared today. And we'll share that with our audience so they can delve into that because it is a very fascinating story. I'm curious that the kind of moment you decided, okay, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to do something different. I don't want my son to grow up like I did and get into this environment. Was it as simple as that? Was it kind of like just a switch? You said,
well, okay. It's interesting because it's always a series of small decisions, right? Tony Robbins, who's one of my greatest mentors, says that your destiny is shaped with your moment to moment decisions, right? It's in your moments of decision where your destiny is shaped. And I think back that moment, and it was a moment I got stabbed, and it was in that moment where some lessons that I had my grandparents used to, kidnap me away from my lifestyle, and like they would run away with me for as long as they could before they had to bring me back. And my grandmother would read out of the Bible to me, and I'm not a particularly religious man, but I did remember at that moment when I was facing that there was this thought that went through my head that was, that the sins of the father are born onto the children. And I don't know why that flashed, but there was also a fourth grade teacher that taught me how to, in my environment, to be able to escape through words and through reading and falling in love. So it's in those moment by moment things where it just kept turning into, I want to do a little bit better tomorrow. I want to do a little bit better tomorrow. And what I inherently knew, what unconsciously back then that I know consciously now, is that you have to decide where you want to go. It's going to take information from outside of you. You're going to have to become a different person than you were yesterday to be able to achieve those things that you see for yourself in the future. And it wasn't big things I didn't see myself in a jet or a big house or cars or, traveling the world or doing any, philanthropy and I didn't see myself doing that. I just saw, what if I could go from $6 an hour to $8 an hour? What if I could go from 8 to 10? When I learned to trade, what if I became the owner of the business, right? It's just those small little steps along the way, and understanding that my salvation was in the knowledge of people who had what I wanted. And so that was what I'm still to this day, all the teaching and speaking and all the things that I do, I still am an avid student and reading and being around people that are further down the road than I am.
Mm. Yeah, and isn't it great these days that we have all this technology that allows us to do that real easily?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Tony Robbins, so I know you spent quite a bit of time in the Tony Robbins organization as a trainer. So how did that come about, and what impact did that have on you? I mean, apart from, Tony Robbins has had such a huge impact on anyone that's heard him speak or seen him in presentations, as I have, but to actually be part of the organization must be awesome.
Yes, quite a blessing. And, it's again, just like my life. I mean, you did the research, so I do not have a boring life or a boring story. But much like the rest of my story, it was interesting how I went to work with him. I had come off of a major depression. I had, crashed that third business, and I was massively depressed. I was going through, having panic attacks and different things that I didn't understand at the time, and ended up at homeless for a period of time in Southern California. And I went to a homeless shelter where the pastor that was working, who's still a dear friend of mine today, handed me, I was there for food that day, and he gave me Tony's book. And I just read it, and it was for the first time in my life I realized that my life and where I was because of the decisions I was making in my own life. Prior to that, I was doing, I think, what a lot of unconscious people do. They blame other people, they blame circumstances, they blame their government, their president, their surroundings, their skin color, their religion, whatever it is that they can find that is easier than taking personal responsibility. That was me. And when I read that book, I was like, wow, my life, my destiny, my life is in my own hands because of the decisions I'm making. So that meant the relationships I had, the health I had with my body, the money I was making. And so it was an awakening for me to take back control of my own mind. And, went from that. I did my last drug deal on the beach so that I could afford a ticket to go to Tony Robbins' event, and went, changed my life. I got to meet him at that event and shake his hand. I went to the back of the room and I had, this was back before they have those instant swipers, where they can swipe your credit card right there. They had the old machines, right, that would take the imprint. And so I had some credit cards that I'd kept from my previous life. I don't know why, but I did. And you had to, sign up for his Master University. And so I went to the back of the room and I said, "Hey, I want to go." And so I gave him a bad credit card and got my picture, just to get my picture, because you couldn't get your picture taken with him or shake his hand unless you did. So I met him and then decided that I wanted to go to work for him. And over the course of the next, I don't know, I left that event. I had enough money in my pocket to go to a local charitable place and buy a blue pants, white shirt, a red tie that had some cigarette burns in it, a pair of shoes, and went and got a job. I started selling cars, and then I started calling Tony's business. I want to go to work. I want to go to work. And along the way, they would say, "What's your experience?" I'm like, "I have none. I just want to come to work there." And they had two positions open. One was internal, taking phone calls. The other one was out doing what Tony does on a smaller scale for companies, which I didn't want to do because the thought of public speaking terrified me. And so, long story short, I ended up making enough money selling cars to be able to actually pay for the Master University that I had given him a bum credit card for, and went to an event where Lauren Slocum, one of the wife of his first employee, was facilitating. And we went to dinner just serendipitously. I ended up at dinner with her and she said, "Tell me your story. Everybody here seems to be interested in where you came from." And I did. And she said, "Oh, so you want to work for Tony?" So she picked up the phone and called him. And the only job that they had was that speaking one. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. Yeah. And she looked me in the eyes and she said, "Do not be a wimp. Do you want the job or not?" And she's one of the only people on the face of the planet that could have got away with calling me that. and she used stronger language, but I don't want to cuss on your, on your podcast. But, ended up going to work with him and, traveled the world and then left there. And while I was doing it, interesting that leads into what I do these days is that while I was there, I got to meet some of the most amazing minds in business. And so while I was traveling, I figured, hey, this would be a great opportunity for me to learn what I did in my three failures, because I had taken great notes and I didn't make the same mistakes twice so that I wouldn't do it again. But I didn't know what to do. I knew exactly what not to do.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what to do. What were those principles in business that led to success? And so I got to hang out with some of the brightest minds in business, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, just picking their brain and pulling out their wisdom and then being able to turn that into the system that all of my businesses operate under now. And as I was telling you before, I've got Harvard grads, Yale grads, and Wharton grads that go through my processes and procedures and implement them in their companies at a super high level. It was a blessing. And I got to learn how to speak and, fell in love with a lot of really great things. It was another side of life that I didn't even know existed because of my background. And, and so that was how I got started with Tony, and he was a great mentor along the way. And since then, I became one of his platinum partners. And then, we did an undercover rescue of, some underage sex slaves together. And he's big in advocating that world. And, if you can imagine Tony Robbins undercover, it's yeah, quite hard to do.
That's right. Yeah. He's a pretty imposing figure.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So well, that's the story, man. It's again, I tried to make it as short as I could, but it's a good one.
Yeah, yeah, it is a good one. And there's so much I like about that. You know, you mentioned earlier in talking about the transitional moments to where you kind of decided you'd had enough of the old life and you were moving out of that, that knowing where to go and knowing what the next goal was really critical. And clearly there you were exposed to Tony and you decided, I want to work with him. That was your goal and you were really persistent about getting there. So I love that because I think there's a real lesson and metaphor in that for anyone. You know, if you really want something and determined and just, you know, do whatever it takes to get it. But the other thing that I really like is then stepping out of your comfort zone and doing something that you didn't think you were good at or, you know, you've had apprehension about.
Yes, sir.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, that was, and that's how it's been. I mean, I just, you know, you mentioned comedy and to jump to where I am today,
yeah.
It's just been innovation after business to bit to another business to then we opened a consulting company. It was going to be for a short amount of time, but because I've written a book, it's coming out this next year about my systems and my processes. And we wrote the book so that I could buy, so that the business owners that I was going to buy their company would understand how to set it up to optimize for cash flow and for exit. And along the way, they said, well, you should probably have some companies that you don't own that you teach your systems to so that we could have those stories for the book. And that led to opening temporarily a consulting company to teach those processes. And it was such a wild hit that I brought over another gentleman from the Tony Robbins organization to head that up. And now we teach companies all around the world how to best optimize for cash flow and for sustainability, for business owners to get their time back so they can make more money, get more time so they can do more good, because that all leads into the whole process of dropping the pebble in the pond to be able to teach those skill sets to people who are already wanting to do good things so that they can support hunger or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be the things I'm interested in, but because ultimately I think that's what life is about. It's about service. And if we're not serving, we're not really truly alive.
Yeah. I was just going to move on to that in terms of service, because what I found, that pervade all the stuff that I'd read about you is that, first of all, in the business area, you had very clear service orientation, service focus, but then you've taken that to the next level and possibly that came in your time with Tony Robbins, the idea of, driving to earn revenue and profit that you can then use to contribute back to the community in some way.
Yeah, that really is. I mean, again, my world philosophy, it's not really a religion, is just that, you know, we're born and we're given this level, each one of us, this level thing called potential. And in that potential, we're supposed to get as good as we possibly can. That's reading, that's experiencing, that's failing and learning and innovating and doing those things so that we can serve other people at a higher level. And that's my philosophy about life. So that led into, okay, now I've got these businesses that I own. I've got a successful consulting company and, you know, I've got more time on my hands because my system was built up because I was ambitiously lazy. I didn't want to have to be at any of my companies, you know, and now with a couple dozen companies, I don't run any of them. And that's because I built these systems out to do so.
Yeah.
And that led to, okay, well, what am I going to do with my time? And that, again, led into philanthropy. And when I got into the world of philanthropy, obviously, the systems that I had from business were able to translate. Mm. And so we've gone in and we've helped, you know, we support about 80 charities right now in educating them how to get better at what they do, raising capital, how to use that capital, and how to better look at whatever it is that they do, you know, whether it's feeding people, rescuing underage sex slaves, domestic violence is a big area that I love, and making their product, which is lowering the domestic violence abuse statistics, lowering the amount of kids that are being trafficked, lowering the amount of people that are starving to death. Those are the outcomes, right? Where in a business it's profit, when in in charities and not for profit 501c3s in our country, that leads to their profit really is reducing the statistics in the area where there's a lot of suffering. And so that's what has led to that. And then we thought, well, how could we build a bigger audience? And that led into me becoming a comedian on top of everything else that we're doing.
Yeah. I was going to ask how that did that transition come about. So I'll come back to that, and I'll come back. Sure. I want to talk about the, your philanthropic work a little bit more as well, but I just want to touch on something you said leading up to all this, and that was around building the systems that took you out of the business. And I think there's a key message there. And I've got a note here that your secrets to business are around a great team and great customer service, but there's probably a third one that I should have written on there, and that's having a system that essentially takes you out of the business, which is pretty well the secret that Michael Gerber's been preaching for about 50 years now.
Yeah. Well, you look at it, I mean, and I looked back over the course of my life, and if I would have had a guide like me, and because I'm one of the, I didn't graduate from high school. I've had to scratch. Nobody would lend me a dollar. I wouldn't have either, and nobody trusted me as far as my decision making in business and whatnot. And I wouldn't have either. Like, it was, I had to build this thing up from the ground up. And so when you read a book, usually, and not all the time, but 90% of the time, it's written by somebody who took somebody else's message and wrote another book. When you go to somebody's seminar, it's somebody that's not necessarily practicing those principles that they teach from stage, or it's so myopic, we don't know where it fits in the algorithm of our business. And so when I started doing what I was doing, I built it for myself. I built my system for myself so that I could have time and businesses that grew predictably over time with systems. And then that led into, how do you hire the right people and so on and so forth. So all I've done is take the wisdom out of the same books that everybody else has written or read, and the seminars that everybody else has gone to, plus my own failures and successes. And I molded that into a system that worked for me in my companies. Then when we found that translated it even better into other companies for other people. Because really what people are searching for is not another BS opinion about how businesses and companies work. I have to meet a payroll, a giant one, with all the companies that I have and how many people that work for me. I have to meet a payroll every Friday, and I can't take the time, because that's the real value that we have as business owners is we only have 24 hours in a day. We wish it was 36. But to be able to take those ideas, where do we put them? Does it make my business worse? Does it make it better? Well, I built an underlying system and a process that is perfectly sequenced around the principles of successful businesses. And it doesn't matter what it is. My holdings, include janitorial and car wash and animation and on and on and on. Very few of them do I have two companies of the same one. Yeah. And so the principles of business work the same, not what you do, it's how you do it. And I had to build out that system. So that's really what our consulting company teaches other companies and other business owners, is a guy who was just like them, that didn't have a bunch of resources and a bunch of things to fall back on, that literally had to scratch and fight and figure out a way, a combination of things that would come together to be able to, guide my own companies to success. And that now has led into guiding other heroes of their own business to be better at what they do. It's kind of that, it's like the magic trick. I teach the magic trick, and then you don't need the magician anymore.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And I really like that you you've taken your own lessons combined with what you've learned from, you know, studying other people and build it into a system that is universally applicable.
There we yes. go. Yes, across the board. And again, that's what we found. I mean, you know, there's some, whatever business your listeners happen to be running, they're already good at that.
Mm.
You know, it's how can I turn, because a lot of businesses are running their companies around profit. Well, you should be running it around free cash flow. Mm. You know, you go from profit to operating cash flow to free cash flow. Free cash flow is where it's at, because that's what you're trying to, that's the money you can take out of your businesses, and it doesn't impact in any way, shape, or form the incremental progress, the 10%, the 20%. My portfolio grows at about 30% per year and year over year. And that's really what people are trying to do. They're trying to build in a system that creates growth. And there's a lot of mistakes that are made because we don't understand the outcome. The proper outcome is I'd like to own all of my time and have a residual stream of income that is just growing year after year after year. And I couldn't see how to invest that in the stock market or to, you know, other things, which I've done before, and I always lost my money. Yeah. Well, I built a system that is predictable for me, and you know, and that's sustained me, my family, and now has allowed me the freedom to be able to do the philanthropic things that I do and start a whole nother career in another area.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. And I'm keen to learn more about that free cash flow principle, but we'll have to leave that, I think, for another time. And maybe people can read your book as well when it comes out.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about the philanthropic initiatives that you're involved in, the ones that are close to your heart.
Well, you know, the number one, obviously, because it's part of my origin story, is around domestic violence. And, you know, I started stepping in front of my mom when I was about 7 years old and trying to take as many beatings for her as I could. And, you know, that, so there's a charity that I work with, I'm on the board of, called A New Dawn. And, you know, and that's one of my, after my heart. Well, then the one around, you know, underage sex trade and human trafficking, that came as somebody asking me, they wanted me to go on a mission and thought my background would lend itself well to that. And then the feeding people came from Ambush Jane, is the founder of Feed a Billion. And he and Tony Robbins actually started it at one of his seminars. And I thought, you know, if there's a lot of domestic violence that happens because there's not enough money or not enough resources, not enough food, you know, the human trafficking is built around poverty and lack of education. And it all starts at home where there's not enough resources. And so I thought, you know, if we could, on a grand scale, figure out that A, there's enough food for everybody on the planet to eat, it's just a distribution and a control problem in some of the poorer areas of the world, that if we could solve that or at least make a dent in it, that would then downstream lower the incidences of domestic violence and human trafficking. So those are the three that I really focus on. And those are the three that are really have my attention these days. But I also work in other areas. This year, 2019, we're working in anti-suicide mental health area. I'm doing a big event in Las Vegas at the end of January. That's gonna be a pretty big deal, and for the military and for college campuses and whatnot. But and lots of other things that I donate to around pets and, you know, different things. But those are the three core that I participate in. As I said, we support 80 right now. And they're just all over the place in the suffering that they're helping ease in the world.
Mm, yeah. Well, that's great initiatives. There's no shortage of problems in the world, unfortunately. And it's good to be able to give back. And so I really salute you for all that. And it's wonderful that, you know, you've built your whole business and success around that that really powerful why of giving back to the community.
Well, it's innovation, you know, and what happens, what I have found is that, you know, when you start really digging into the issues in the world, once you've put a roof over your head and, you know, you're feeding yourself and, you know, you've got a vehicle and, you know, you've got that taken care of, you know, more of that doesn't fill the hole in your heart or in your soul.
Hmm.
You know, what more does and why I'm very driven, you know, I mean, everybody tells me all the time, Jason, you work like you're broke. And it's because, you know, it's because that if we're going to solve some of these, you know, the 12 big issues in the world, well, well-resourced people have to be involved. You know, people that can do that, and so it drives my drive, I guess, is fed by the fact that I need to keep learning, I need to keep innovating, I need to keep growing, I need to keep changing my approach, so that I have more resources, so that I have more influence, so that I can do more good, and that's what keeps me inspired. I don't mean this in a flippant way, but I don't need another house, I don't need another car. I don't, you know, what I do need is the genuine satisfaction and love that I give and receive when I'm helping people that are in a weaker position than I am. Mm. And I'm semi addicted to that. And that's what led into the whole comedy thing. I mean, that's something I never, ever thought I would do, but you know, we got together at the beginning of 2017, so last year, me and my board, and we, you know, been obviously doing philanthropy and charity for a while, and I said, okay, what have we learned and what can we do to accelerate this? And one of the things that came up was when we would bring in celebrities like Ashton Kutcher and you know, lots of big names, I'm not here to name drop, but
yeah.
When we would bring them in, it would help bring a lot of attention to those causes that we were looking for, right? A tweet from The Rock hits like 100 million
yeah,
people,
yeah.
Right? And so I was like, well, why don't I just build a celebrity brand and, you know, and go from there? And my board laughed. Everybody did exactly what you did, which was they laughed.
Yeah.
And the two guys,
oh, been, funny.
Right. Yeah. And the two guys that were with me, you know, they have known me the longest, been with me for 15 plus years, said, no, I think he's serious. Mm. And I said, okay, well, what do we do? Like, do I move to Hollywood to get into some movies? What, you know, what do? I got a face made for radio. So, you know, what do we do? And, it led into I love laughing. You know, it's always been a way for me to ease pain in my own life. And then to bring other people out of their own suffering is to make them laugh. So I thought, well, I'll get into comedy. And so that's what launched my show, The Bald Avenger Show. And that's the sort of the, you know, the other persona that I have is The Bald Avenger. And it's kind of funny and whatever, but it's really around bringing an audience together around that show, The Bald Avenger Show, which is on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and, you know, YouTube, you can find it anywhere, but thebaldavengershow.com is where we're gathering audience. And that audience, a couple of years ago, as I was doing this before it formulated, started to call themselves the Misfit Nation, which in our definition, the Misfit Nation is a group of people, some that have made mistakes. I've made mistakes a lot. You know, there's a lot of things that I'm leaving out in this podcast, but you know, by watching anything that I do,
yeah,
I say all the mistakes of my marriages and my bankruptcies and, you know, the drugs and all of the stuff that I went through. And a lot of times what happens is we make a mistake in life and we let that define us and we stop trying. And the Misfit Nation is just a group of human beings that came together around this concept behind the Bald Avenger that says, yeah, we made mistakes, but sometimes there's the biggest lesson and the biggest service to other people by utilizing that message for other people. And, and not letting the people that are around us, because that's who controls us the most, right? There's a saying out there that says that the strongest need in the human psychology is for us to remain consistent with who we are. And who we are is greatly defined by the people that are around us, expecting us to be the same today as we were yesterday. Mm. And we're not. We're an evolution. We're an evolutionary animal.
That's right.
Your innovation. I mean, you teach about it, right? Mm. So if we're not innovating, we're not happy. We're not making progress. And so if we make a mistake, a DUI or a divorce or, you know, whatever the case may be in our failures, that if we stop there, we've now stunted our potential and paused it where it shouldn't be paused. Mm-hmm. And really what it is, it's about A, forgiving ourselves, making amends for the people that we did damage to, and then moving on and being that reason why, because somebody can look at me and go, if that idiot can do it, I can do it. And that's really the message I want to leave, you know, for everybody is that I'm not anything special, but I will tell you that the reason the Bald Avenger came to be was so that I could make it okay for other people to try again.
Yeah.
Even one more time.
Hmm. Well, I mean, there's so much to like about that. Everybody's made mistakes. We've all made mistakes. Some people made little mistakes. Some people have made big mistakes. But I love several things about how you're approaching this. First of all, you're totally transparent. And I think you say in some of the podcast interviews I heard, you say, well, there's nothing people can hang on me because I'm totally transparent. So there's, you know, there's nothing, there's no skeletons in the closet because they're all out. And the second thing is to make good when you realize that that was a mistake, make good in terms of the damage you might have done to others. Then, right. So first of all, own the mistake, make good on the damage. And then thirdly, okay, what can I learn from this? And what can I help other people learn from this? So one of my philosophies is if I can learn from other people's mistakes, that saves me making them. So there's a service there. If I've made a mistake and I can tell other people about it, here's how you avoid that, then it becomes a gift.
Well, that, you know, you end up realizing that that's why we made the mistake in the first place.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and if we can help somebody else avoid it, that's why my entire life, like everybody, you know, I'm not the hero, you know, I'm not the person who is, you know, everybody should look to. I'm a guide, you know, that's all I, in business, in philanthropy, you know, hopefully with my comedy, you know, even my comedy has that edge to it where it has nothing to do with really with me. It's about those struggles that we go through, making fun of them so that we can just see them, right? I mean, you know, this, to innovate, you have to take something that you've looked at the same direction for 10 years and twist it by one inch. And now you've got another view.
That's
right. And that gives you a whole other understanding about how to approach that issue or that problem or that challenge, which gives you a whole other thought process or intellect to be able to solve it. Right. Because a lot of people are running around defining their problem as unsolvable. Well, it's going to remain that way then.
Mm.
If we define it as I just need to twist it just a little bit to give it a different angle, you know, for instance, for me, I used to say, poor me, I was abused, poor me, I had this daddy that didn't love me and would beat me and blah, blah, blah. Now, I shifted that by one inch and I said, wow, you know, thank God he was my dad. You know, thank God he was the person who raised me, because now I do more work. I would have never done the work that I do in domestic violence had he not done that.
Hmm.
I would have, you know, I'm so grateful for the strength that it built up in me, because a lot of people are running around afraid. They get to a place where they're making $150,000 or $200,000 out of their business. And they're like, oh, now I got to hold on to this because what if I lose that? And I don't have those fears. You know, I have the belief system that you could drop me naked in any city in the world, and the next day I'm going to come out with $10,000 in my pocket and a brand new suit, right? Because I'm not living in that same fear. So there's so many grateful things I'm grateful for by having lived the life that I lived and having the father that I had, and the situations that I went through, that it just shifted an inch. I went from poor me to thank God, right?
Yeah.
And well, it changes everything.
There's a really important message there, of course, and that's the mindset that you actually have and the belief systems that you have about your own ability to do good and taking ownership of your own destiny.
Well, it was Viktor Frankl that said it, right? I am more free than my captors.
Yeah.
You know, Viktor Frankl in the concentration camps. And he said, the one thing that people cannot control is how you define things. Mm-hmm. And if you see yourself as more free than your captors in a concentration camp, well, that must be applicable to my life because it's nowhere near that level of tragedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it was rough. But no matter what, there's very few people that are going to have lived through that are going to be on here that would have to live through that. And listening to you that would have to go through that kind of a scenario. And so whatever scenario that if he could do that in that scene, then what can you do by redefining your own challenges? And yes. the biggest thing, the biggest thing for me is the people that we have around us that we allow to define us. And really what they do is they end up bullying you into not growing or changing or shifting. There's that person who knows your secret, right? that you're like, well, I'm not going to get any bigger because somebody knows that secret about me. Well, get it out.
Yeah.
You know, take away that leverage. There's that person who loves you that doesn't want to see you try again because you failed at your last five or six attempts. That person they're controlling you by telling you probably don't want to do that again. And then there's the people that are loosely associated to you who talk behind your back and are telling stories to everybody to try to keep you small. And really, once you realize that all of those are apparitions of your own design that you are allowing that you're allowing to keep you in a place where you don't have to try to maximize or optimize your potential. Once you realize that, you become free.
Yeah.
And now nobody can touch you.
Yeah, that's right. And you can make it mean something entirely different, right? Which is what the example you gave about Viktor Frankl, he made it mean something entirely different. And
absolutely. And you might as well make something up, like a lot of people are running around with these apparitions in their head and their worst case scenarios never come true. Yeah, right. Yeah. And so you might as well make up stuff that's going to inspire you and make you smile and make you fun. You know, there's so many things that come from being a person who others love to be around.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
There's so many great things. It's like the beginning building block is being someone who you would want to hang out with. And if you're not, change it.
Yeah. That's great advice. And we make up our own reality anyway. So we might as well make up a good one.
Amen.
All right. This is fascinating, Jason. I could go on for hours, but I think we're reaching that point where we need to start wrapping up. So I'd like to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's five questions that are designed to help our innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. Not that you've already given us heaps of tips, but hopefully we can encapsulate five really simple ones that will inspire everyone to go and do something awesome today. So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Realize, and this is a big one. I'm going to go a little bit deep on this one.
Okay.
Realize that no matter what you believe, a lot of the world's religions or belief systems are built around the idea that we are born of a creative creator, right? And it doesn't matter what religion you come from. I've studied most of them. And most of the world religions teach us that we're made in that entity's likeness. And one of the biggest things that we learn is that power that, call it God, call it the universe, call it whatever it is that you want to, Allah, it doesn't matter. That then if we're made in that likeness and we're of that, then we have that same creativity. And so around innovation, I would say that it's envision whatever it is, because that's the thing. Everything's been done in this world except for your life, right? And if that's the case, then whatever your vision is uniquely suited for you to be able to accomplish it. But you have to get clear about that and then build the steps backwards for you to be able to achieve it to where you are today. And realize that anything is possible between innovation and between technology and between old school and new school thought processes. You can do anything that your mind can imagine, right? And that's not a fortune cookie. That's real.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it was Walt Disney that said that, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. And I think you've demonstrated that in you know, your life so far and in the stories you've shared with us today.
Well, 47 years old, I'm a comedian, so I must be doing something, you know. Must be continuing to innovate.
Yeah, but certainly around, you know, having a vision of where you want to be and then working backwards and constructing the steps to get you there. All right, so what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
New ideas, it works in reverse for me. New ideas, what I look for is a gap in the marketplace. You can either take somebody else's idea and improve upon it, or you can create an entirely different lane. And so, but it's all centered around, in every one of my businesses, I fall in love with the outcomes of my customers. And so when you do that, then you innovate and you create different systems. I mean, I could go through the Fortune 500 companies that we've worked with that, you know, we've said, okay, well, what if we did this? What if we did that? And, you know, and falling in love, paying attention to where people go, man, I wish I had this, or, you know, just like what's happening with Uber. It's a great area. I got asked to, you know, speak to a big taxi group. And I said, I don't know if you want me to talk to these people. They're not going to like what I have to say. Yeah. You know, there's somebody that was refused. They didn't fall in love with the outcome of their customer. They fell in love with their own outcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their business was their way. And Uber came along and said, yeah, I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. And I would pay more to get it. I don't want Uber to know this, but I would pay more to get in an Uber than a taxi. I know that they say it's a big pricing issue, but it's not. It's a clean car. It's a friendly person. It's convenience.
It's the whole experience.
Credit card. And, yeah, it's just all of that. And so that would be my answer on that.
That's great advice. I was reading something the other day, and I can't remember where this was, but it was talking about a lot of those new technologies like Uber, like Airbnb, like Amazon, and, you know, the online retailers, and saying that it's not, you know, the death of the physical retailer is not Amazon's fault. The death of the taxi industry is not Uber's fault. The death of, or the hotel industry, or the death is kind of the wrong term, but the demise is not Airbnb's fault. It's the fault of their lack of customer service.
Amen. Amen. And customer service. Yeah. I love that we live in a day and age where customer service is a new idea.
Yeah. All right. Do you have a favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative? And it might be your own system.
It really is. I mean, the name of the book is called Growth, Mastering Your Business G-Spot. And that's also, we built out a 12-week program for people that, you know, can't, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, timing or finances or whatever, we built out a system, an affordable system, that goes over 12 weeks, and it's built out for several reasons, to be 12 weeks. It's a quarter, it's 12 months, the way that we run our businesses, I run my companies 90 days at a time. Ultimately I break that down to 7 days at a time. And ultimately I break that down to a day at a time. Ultimately, when I buy a brand new company, I break that down to hour by hour and employee by employee to make sure that we're optimizing all those activities. And it's not I built an algorithm that's currently being copyrighted and for IP purposes. It's called the business gamification algorithm. And all I did was take the concepts of something like an Angry Birds, for instance, where, you know, if you've ever seen that video game on your phone, people spend hours on that, slingshotting a bird to knock over a bunch of pigs. And it's because people want to win at life and they're not winning in their marriage. They're not winning with their health. They're not winning at work. So they can sit down on their phone and get that win by just a simple game. And so I thought, why not, since we spend most of our life working or creating some sort of revenue. So I don't call what I do work, but creating revenue, why not make it fun and a game that you can win? Well, you got to understand the rules, right? If I have no idea what the rules are for cricket. How in the world am I ever going to win the game of cricket? Football, American football, I know the rules, right? So I became very good at that sport. And it's the same thing in business. 99% of the people, and I'm saying very high, but if 90%+ of companies fail in the first, 5 to 10 years of their existence, that means there's a lot of people out there that don't understand the rules to the game they're playing. Well, my system lays it all out in the exact same way that I learned it and the exact same way that I implemented in my companies. And it's got bits and pieces of the greatest business minds that are out there that wrote books and whatnot, but it's placed sequentially exactly in the right spot for you to understand where that goes in your business, right? One of my mentors, Keith Cunningham, says businesses are not bathrobes. One size does not fit all. And a lot of the advice you get is one size fits all for your marketing. Yeah. One size fits all for your operations. One size fits all for your innovation. Like it doesn't work that way. So I've taken how you can customize your bathrobe to your business because I have to do it. I buy a janitorial company in Denver, Colorado, and how is that like the car wash that I own in Pittsburgh? How are they different from each other? How are they the same? But I can apply those same business underlying principles to make whatever it is that I'm doing in that moment optimized for cash flow and ultimately for exit if I want to sell it.
Yeah, great advice. Now, when does the book publish?
We're looking at April of next year.
April, okay.
April of 2019. But again, the system exists now. People could go through the system and they just go to AntonJ.com/growth, and they can read all about the program, and we've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that have gone through it now. Again, as I was saying, Yale, Harvard, Wharton School of Business, all these people that have gone through it, and we're putting it on an education platform in 2019, and it's just, again, it's not a bragging thing because frankly, 80% of the stuff that's in that program, people already know. The thing that we got copyrighted and trademarked is the business gamification algorithm, because that's my math. That's what I came up with out of my own innovation. Everything else is somebody else's that I stood on the shoulders of giants to get the information. But it's stuff that people are doing to meet payroll anyway, but it may be out of sequence. If you move one thing around, maybe the level of attention you're paying to a customer shifting from, an advertising based business to a customer service based business, shifting from a nepotism based culture to a performance based culture, like these little shifts in the right place at the right time for your company make massive differences.
Yeah. Great advice. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes so people can go check it out, and we'll keep an eye on the book for April. So, awesome. Yeah. So that kind of leads naturally into the next question. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
Oh, that's such a great question because, now you get into the major piece of why businesses are not bathrobes. It's because businesses are nothing but a culmination of people. And in people, you have their fears, their weaknesses, their strengths, their prejudices, their, how they look at things. And so again, going back to the system we built, we take as much of that off of the table as we possibly can and say, whether you're the receptionist, whether you're the doctor, whether you're the CEO, whether you're the CFO, whether you're the sales trainer, whether you're the salesman or man or woman, here is what you do to be successful in your position that then leads into the overall company being successful, which means we all rise together. And so having those principles or a system to, that's duplicative is really the magic of how do you keep them on task. People love to win. So if you build a system for them to be able to win, they're going to be happier to be around. And, you know, people are going to, you know, your employees are now loving coming to work because they're winning for their own reason, right? And instead of your reason and getting you another car or you in a bigger house, they're winning for their own reason, putting their kid through college or bringing their mom up from Mexico or you know, having a surgery for grandpa or whatever it is that they need to be working for. You set it up around that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
until somebody realizes in their company, I don't know what I don't know, and I've reached the what they call the Peter principle after Peter Gruber, right? Mm-hmm. I've reached the maximum capacity of my own performance level. I must learn. And when you're learning, the reason why a lot of us don't apply what we do learn is because we don't know how it's going to impact the interconnectedness, the interconnected nature of that change in my own company.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great advice in that. And I guess for me, the big message there is, you know, making sure, well, first of all, that a company is made up of people and keeping the people first in mind and understanding their whys and giving them a reason to actually follow the system and having a system that's replicable and scalable.
Yeah. Give them a map, you know, make, you know, help them be successful. You know, if to have a map, well, where are you going? You know, you got to know each one of your employees, or at least your managers, that managers know their each person on their team's outcome and so on and so forth. You know, there should be nobody in your company that somebody doesn't know why they're working for you and what their outcome is for the next year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Because if you build your business around their outcomes, they will never leave you.
Yeah.
Because where else are they going to go where somebody cares at that level and then built a system and a process for them to win at it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody wants to win.
Exactly. Yeah. Great advice. All right. And the fifth question is, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves? I think we've touched on this a little, but maybe you can encapsulate.
Yeah. You know, the best thing that people can do to differentiate themselves is have a plan, build a amazing culture, fall in love with the outcomes of your clients, and rinse and repeat over and over and over again.
Yeah. That's captured really well in three short sentences. So I love it.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Trying to shorten it up for you because I know where that time is.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Jason. This has been really fabulous. What's the best place for people to reach out and say thank you for all that you've shared and maybe get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. Jason, I would say that, you know, Jason Cisneros on Facebook, the Bald Avenger is probably the best place to go. The Bald Avenger on Facebook, reach out through there. We've got somebody watching that at all times. Anton J is my company, AntonJae.com, and then /growth. And you'll find out about the processes and the procedures that we've built. And, you know, and that's the best way to reach out. And I'd love to hear from people and find out what they got from your show. And hopefully we added a little bit of value to them tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. And, look forward to people reaching out. We'll have links to all of that in the show notes so that's easy for them to do. Now, two more questions. First of all, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
I want to really think about this. The one piece of advice, never stop learning. Never stop learning. I mean, your show is why I'm here, you know, why you do it is to educate people and give them some tips and processes and to be a guide along the way of getting them from where they are to where they want to go. Never stop learning and always keep a smile on your face.
Two great ideas and great recommendations. I mean, I love this podcast for lots of reasons, but one of them is that each time I learn so much on each interview, And it's fun. So that gives me the smile as well. And I hope to share that with all my audience. Now, the final Absolutely. Question is, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why? Snuck in two questions there.
Well, you already got the Blanchards. So,
yeah.
I would say there's Misty Lane. She's doing really great things. She's another one from the Misfit Nation. Lauren Harris would be really great to have on. He's a guy that had an interesting upbringing and, you know, had 24 moms. He was passed around from, you know, adopted, mother to adopted mother, and you know, just has lived a fascinating life. But those would be two that really immediately come to mind. Okay. I'd love to make an introduction for you.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thanks, Jason. So Misty and Lauren, if you are listening to this, look out for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Jason Cisneros.
You got it.
Yeah. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights and being so open and generous with us today on the podcast. Jason, I've really enjoyed this. I've learned a lot. I've written down heaps, but I'm going to listen back again to the podcast and make sure I take some more notes. I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm proud of you, and your listeners should be grateful for the you know, the wisdom and the innovation and the knowledge that you bring to the table and that they don't have to pay for. So thank you for producing this and committing to it. It's a big level of commitment. Those of you that don't know about doing a show, it's a big level of commitment. So I'm grateful to you.
Thank you.
Well, wasn't that exciting, inspirational, and full of great advice? I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Jason as much as I did. For me, the core message in all of the stories Jason shared was the importance of focusing on the outcome, coming to love the outcome, in fact, and always taking steps, even if small steps, towards that outcome. Of course, there was so much more in the interview with Jason. I'd love to know what you took away from Jason's episode today. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Jason Cisneros. That is JasonCisneros. All lowercase or one word, innovabiz.co/Jason Cisneros. You'll find contact information for getting in touch with Jason there, as well as links to his website and to the Bald Avenger site. Jason suggested I interview Lauren Harris of the Kenneth Rainin Foundation and Misty Lane, one of the members of his Misfit Nation, on a future Innova Buzz podcast. So, Lauren and Misty, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Jason Cisneros. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Don't delay. Get onto it right now. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the Innova Buzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.